All right, Drew, how are things going on?
Things are going well. Start of the week, big week, another big week for us. So gotta get going, but everything's going well so far.
Yeah.
How's everything over there with you?
Not too bad, not too bad. You know, it's one of those moments here in this particular time that, you know, we can only hope that, you know, every day has its own, let's say, innovative day, and let's say interesting day and so forth. But every day is a surprise, and every now and then, every now and then we stumble upon the things that we otherwise thought is not necessary for us to even think about. But now with this particular situation, we are more and more drawn into the situation, you know, which otherwise in the past was never a concern. Yeah. And I mean, simple things, right? Simple things like just going to the supermarket or just dropping off your kids on and so forth, right? So you're more cautious now. I'm asking my daughter not to take the public transport, you know, just to avoid any hassle, right? So those kind of things, right? So
yeah, no, for sure. You know, working from home, I have to think about, you know, do I have a mask in the car when I go out? Who am I going to see? Are they being safe? It's a bunch of stuff, a bunch of things we got to be concerned about today.
Yeah. And in this mix of everything, right? So we have all the challenges that is in front of us, and in the mix of everything, you are also running your business, right? So how do you see that, right? Like, you know, if you think about as a leader in a company, you have a role which is now, let's say, even more challenging compared to the past, or do you see it differently? You see this more of an opportunity for you to excel even further, you know, because this gives you a little bit of more sweet spot, because maybe this is what you wanted.
It is an interesting position to be in, I would say. You know, when we, prior to COVID, we were growing at an interest, you know, at a pace that was, you know, month over month, we were doing well, and we were growing steady. And then all of a sudden, March comes around and we see this 20x growth in you know, just over a month, and we're a startup company trying to scale, and it, you know, it is a dream to be able to say we scaled at 20x in over a month, but at the same time, it's a strange feeling to say it's happening during a global pandemic. But it is an opportunity. There is no doubt about that. We've been in the space now for almost 2 years, and now what we're seeing is, you know, we had 3 or 4 competitors prior to COVID, and now that's jumping to 20. So, you know, we've been in the space for a while, so we know what we were trying to accomplish, whereas other companies seem to have come in out of necessity, having to do something where they need a telemedicine option, or, you know, they were going to go out of business because, you know, providers couldn't see patients in office, and it just became this land grab of, you know, trying to get these providers on your platform. But yeah, it is an amazing opportunity, but it is coming at a strange time to be successful.
Yeah. And you mentioned like you had to scale it, right? Of course, like when you have more clients, it means that there is a certain, let's say, expectation that you have from your own system versus when the client is multiplied by X amount. How do you prepare yourself as far as the scalability is concerned? What kind of challenges that you had to go through as far as really being able to scale it right, like overnight, or I don't know, maybe it's out of proportion, but still, let's say, you know, you had to scale it as soon as possible, right?
Right. No, for sure. I mean, the main challenge for us was probably keeping up with the demand. As soon as it happened, we had to hire rather quickly and get these new individuals up to speed on our platform, how to convey that information to the customer. And at that time, it wasn't such a difficult sell. That wasn't the difficult part, because we had clients who needed it, and they were coming to us, and they, you know, we could have pitched them in 10 minutes and they would have been ready to sign up, because it was just such a necessity that they just wanted the first thing that came up. And now the actual challenge is you know, a month into the pandemic, can we provide them the customer support necessary for them to, you know, be successful in this new digital age? Because a lot of these providers, you know, they're not the most tech savvy individuals. You know, they're used to seeing people in person, you know, taking blood pressure readings, doing all this. And now they're thrown into a world where they can't physically see the person or touch them, and they have to use this new technology that they've never been trained on, you know, never thought they would use. So that was the real challenge. It wasn't the scaling part actually came easy because they were coming to us. The challenge was a month in, 2 months in, can we get them to a point where they're comfortable doing something that they never thought they would have to do?
And how did you manage, like you said, like you had to perhaps hire people more than what you anticipated to do. And in order to do that, you must have been through a certain process, right? Certain process you applied to your hiring. Right. Maybe you had to cut short some of the let's say processes that you otherwise use in the past when right. It was a normal time. Let's call it that way. what did you do? Like, you know, as far as, you know, saying, okay, these are some of the checks that we don't need versus these are some of the checks we still need. You know, what is the minimum checks that you did in order to hire people within the organization?
Right. So even when I first came on board, you know, it was the process. I'm the third, you know, full-time employee hired at the company right after the two founders. And my, you know, it was like a 2-3 month trial process of making sure, you know, I was a good fit and you know, I would bring what was needed to at the startup world, right? When this happened, we obviously couldn't even take 24 hours. Without hiring like 4 to 5 people, we would have not been able to, you know, onboard all these clients. And the way we did it is we actually have a really great network of advisors. And what they did was we reached out to them and they put us in contact with a number of individuals that had either worked for them or they had, you know, known in the past. And, you know, they vouched for them saying, you know, these guys have experience in, you know, customer service or whether it's sales. And, you know, we basically had to trust them. We met them once for maybe like an hour long interview, and then we basically hired them and gave them a quick training, and some of them started within like 12 hours. They had an interview that night. They were on the next morning. It was unbelievable. I don't know how we did it, but we did
it. Yeah. You got the job done, right? So that's more important. Yeah. And of course, you know, I mean, maybe it's not the right forum to actually say that, but still, I'm just asking this question again, dragging you into this conversation. Do you regret some of the hirings?
Oh, do I regret? That's an interesting question. No, I honestly, it is surprising that we got such great individuals. I mean, I can't imagine running the company now without, you know, some of these people. They came in, you know, with no knowledge of a telemedicine platform. You know, they had experience in different industries, but they are just, you know, they're just a group of people that are willing to learn, and they take, well, I wouldn't say it's criticism, but like if we need them to do something and they don't know, they'll figure out a way to do it. They'll find out. They won't turn down any ask that we have of them. And they've adapted a few times over the past couple of months. You know, we've moved people from sales to, you know, implementing the practice. We moved them from there to customer service. You know, some people have switched from inbound sales to outbound sales. And they, not saying that they've all been comfortable with this, but they've been willing to give it a try. And, you know, so far we've been successful, and I can't say that I regret, you know, it's crazy to say, but yeah, I can't say that I regret the quick hiring process. I do think we got lucky, but yeah.
It could have been,
could have been a lot worse. 100%.
Yeah.
100%. Yeah.
What is one thing that you can say, hey, you know, this is something I learned, right? You know, in terms of adaptability, I'm sure there's a learning there. In terms of quickly able to change the directions, there must be learnings, right? What can you talk about the learnings, you know, as far as you being in this difficult times and being able to really scale it, you know, through the challenges that you still had, but still there might be other learnings that you think, okay, maybe, you know, if it wasn't for COVID, we would have never learned.
Sure. So what I would say is what I've learned is, I think we spoke about it in the beginning, every day is just a different, you cannot predict day to day what's going to happen. The plan we have for tomorrow, tomorrow may come and then we've completely done a 180 and we're going in the opposite direction. This startup world can change so fast, and you know, we have to adapt and be open to change. You know, sometimes some things that we thought we would never do, you know, when I first started, are now, you know, core parts of the platform. You know, 3 months down the line, we were like, you know, we would never do that. And then all of a sudden we're like, you know, I think we have to, otherwise we won't survive. So I think learning that, you know, I've come from more of a, I wouldn't say corporate, but I did work in management for a hospital of, you know, 40,000 employees. And it's, you know, it's a day-to-day thing. You know what's coming. You know what you have to do. You know the work you have to get done. In this atmosphere or in this current climate, you never know what's going to happen, but you have to be prepared and willing to say, you know, my first plan didn't go as well, but, you know, this next plan will.
And, you know, like you mentioned, like, you know, you had to hire people on the fly. You know, a lot of times, you know, you had to follow your instinct, or maybe you had to trust people like who you were collaborating in the past. Now, I'm sure there are challenges as far as the work environment is concerned. But at the same time, working for the extended period, working from home, especially, if you think about the kind of drive a person needs to wake up early and then repeat the action over and over, you know, every single day, because every day is a new day. It doesn't have a classification as in a day, Sunday, Monday, you know, it feels like the same day, right? So yeah. How do you keep up with the motivations, right? How do you motivate yourself at the same time the people that are working for you, and then like keep on motivating them to do the great job?
Sure. Working from home is definitely challenging, especially considering I haven't met the people we brought on during March. I actually haven't physically met most of them. You know, I've only seen them virtually. And it is, you know, it is a challenge because, you know, there's nobody there to, there's no boss watching you or to making sure you do all your work. It's just almost like a trust situation. But I think it's almost easy for us to stay motivated because we see what can happen if we continue to press forward and, you know, do the work and execute. We have these wins, you know, every so often that make it worthwhile, that make you want to continue and make it, you know, something that we're striving to do. And I think we do a good job portraying that to the rest of the team. You know, we're pretty much in contact throughout the day. We have weekly all hands meetings where we keep them engaged in what's happening, you know, even on the fundraising side, the business side, the all these things that, you know, some, if they're just doing sales, they wouldn't probably be privy to. But because we're a small group and, you know, we're trying to grow into something, you know, we think we're going to be the next, you know, billion-dollar business, right? So we exude that confidence in them, and, you know, it just helps them, you know, stay engaged, want to be part of it at the end.
Let's talk about your company, Beam Health. Maybe explain a layman like me who do not understand anything about telehealth. Maybe think about in terms of value, right? In terms of value, what it offers.
So Beam, we're the first marketplace for virtual care. So what you've experienced or what most people know about telemedicine is it's a video visit with a provider. The first version of that was these companies who we call vertically integrated companies. So they hire physicians to work strictly for them to do telemedicine. So for the most part, these are going to be, you know, urgent care clinics, you know, virtual urgent care clinics, because you can't you can't do, you know, strictly virtual care for most specialties. You know, you can do it for certain, you know, primary care for certain illnesses, you can do it. But at some point, you're going to have to go in and see a physician. Now, what we're doing is we're moving on to what we call version two of that, which is we take our platform, our technology, and we go to providers in their own clinics. So we're not hiring these providers to work for us. You know, they keep their practice, they have their own patients. We just give them the software now to conduct these virtual visits with their own patients. So in essence, you know, they already have a patient base. Most patients want to see their own doctor. They don't want to see, because what happens in these version one telemedicine clinics is you just see a random doctor show up on your phone, right? Because you don't have they don't have primary care providers or they don't have specific doctors. What we're doing is giving these patients the opportunity to now either go into the office or still see their own provider, but do it in the comfort of their own home. Maybe it's not something that they need to go to the office for. And, you know, a lot of follow-ups don't need to be done in office. It could be a quick 10-15 minute video call where the provider just checks in, and it just becomes a more convenient solution. And that is, you know, becoming even a bigger convenience with COVID-19 now, you know, being prevalent.
And how does I don't know about the US market or how the regulation works there as far as issuing the prescription over online is concerned. How does that work? You know, like, let's say their patient is sick, and then is a doctor able to generate the prescription online, or how does that work?
Yeah, for the most part, as long as it's not a controlled substance, you know, if a doctor sees a patient and they have a sore throat and they want to prescribe antibiotics, they just send over a script to the pharmacy. They could do this, you know, virtually through a virtual visit. The only thing is the one restriction currently in the U.S. is that the provider needs to be licensed in the state that, you know, the patient is in. As long as that holds up, then, you know, they can prescribe medication during a virtual visit for most illnesses, but not, you know, certain controlled prescription medications like, you know, pain medication and stuff like that. They would have to actually see the patient in person in order to prescribe something like that.
So your primary client is the doctor, or your primary client the users or the patient as well?
So our primary client is the doctor, but, you know, the end goal is to have a marketplace. So we're building what we call, you know, the first marketplace for virtual care. We're trying to onboard as many providers as we can to get a supply of providers. Currently, we have about 1,200. Obviously, we want that to be a lot more. And when we get to a certain point, we'll have the supply of doctors where patients can come and then search for telemedicine care in their area. And, you know, it'll be kind of like what we envision as is almost like an Amazon of virtual care, where a patient can come in, you know, type in either the type of care they're looking for or their symptoms, and they'll see a result list of, you know, the providers in their area that can help them out. So in essence, right now, it's providers, but it is providers and patients. That's the goal.
And what kind of, let's say, if I'm a patient, right? And if I need to have a regular, I don't know, medications for an extended period of time, and I received a prescription from my doctor for, I don't know, an extended period of time, but then let's say the medicine is only, you know, you're good for, I don't know, a month or so. Right. And do you also provide the reminders or the orders automatically and those kind of things, like the interesting things?
Yeah, well, we've actually seen, you know, that the platform is great for is these medication renewals, where normally providers would want to check in and make sure the medication is working properly, because they don't want to keep prescribing it for extended periods, like you said, without a check-in. And normally the patient would have had to go in either once a month, once every 2 months. And, you know, that's time commitment, that's sitting in a waiting room, all for maybe just a few minutes of just a checkup, and then say, okay, yeah, we can continue with this medication. And so what we've been seeing is the platform is great for providers to just quickly do a video call with a patient, just ask, how are they doing on the medication, if everything's okay. You know, these calls can last 5 minutes and then they send off the prescription. It's an easy check-in and it saves the patient time, saves the provider time, saves them money. You know, there's a cost involved in all this, but it's been great for medication renewals.
What are the features? You know, you said like there are many other companies who has sort of, you know, jumped into this particular industry now. What do you think, you know, your USP is, you know, compared to the other companies?
Yeah. I mean, we do have a number of unique features, such as we do payment collection. So this allows the provider to charge a patient during a video visit, and then we collect the money and send it to the provider, which is pretty unique in the space. And we also offer custom EHR integrations. EHRs are the software that, you know, doctors use to keep medical records on patients. And we offer custom integration where that we can have the video actually be launched from within their own, you know, specific EHR. We also do offer free patient-facing marketing. So we have what's called a Beam button, which is a widget that we, if the provider's interested, we can place on their homepage that shows the patient that they do virtual visits. And, you know, this is how you register, this is how you sign up. But what we've actually seen is what providers are looking for is reliability and customer service. We see it all the time where clients will come and do a demo with us and say, you know, they have a specific platform already, but they always have trouble, you know, getting someone on the phone, or when they have an issue, or they place a ticket and it doesn't get responded to for a week. So our main goal and our priority is to provide exceptional customer service. Things like onboarding, we say you can get, we'll have you up and ready within 24 hours, which most other platforms are a week or two. We respond to tickets within an hour. Everything to make it a more wow type of experience for the client is what we want to do. And that's where we think we can separate ourselves from these other, you know, even larger companies who just don't have the manpower time to, you know, respond to all these tickets in a timely fashion.
And I was just thinking about, I'm sure you may have already thought about it, but let's say I'm a doctor and I have like X amount of patients who are regular patients for me. And all I need is, you know, their, I don't know, the pressure, or I don't know, the blood sugar count and those kind of information, right? And I see that there are devices which offers those kind of, let's say, facility where I can take the reading myself, and then as soon as the reading is taken, then perhaps it goes to the internet and I can, those are notified automatically with the system, right? So have you already thought about those kind of, you know, integrations where, you know, maybe the doctors themselves are able to now say, hey, you know, this patient is on the risk zone or something, you know, so that, you know, they don't even need to actually, you know, do a lot of effort to just to get the readings, right? So I'm just thinking about those tools that are available.
Yeah, there's a lot of different integrations and applications that we can delve into. We don't have anything lined up specifically for that today, but we've had discussions with different practices and platforms who want to send their patients virtual care boxes, which have, you know, our platform loaded up on a phone, and then it includes, you know, blood pressure cuffs and all these devices to help them with the virtual care. So definitely something that we're looking into, and it is, like you said, such a value add to the doctor and the patient, because, you know, all that information, all those tests can be readily available for them to review and then, you know, go into these visits. So it's definitely on our radar, and it's something we want to get involved in, you know, sooner rather than later.
Because, you know, if that's a repetition, right? So that becomes an automated process, right? So if I'm a patient, then I would be, I could take the blood sugar count every single day or even week, you know? So, yeah. and then the doctor would know instantly that, you know, something is wrong, right? So right. Maybe, you know, I'm just thinking out loud right now. I saw some of the tools as such. Right. And think about the solutions that you are offering at the moment. What do you think is next for you guys in as far as let's say some of the challenges perhaps you want to solve? You know, I'm sure that you're aware of those challenges and where you should be heading next.
So the challenge that we believe we're trying to solve is access to healthcare is becoming increasingly difficult. And there's a number of factors. You know, some people or patients just don't live in areas where, you know, there's a good healthcare system built. You know, there's a lot of rural areas in the US. You know, major cities have these great hospitals, but, you know, sometimes patients have to travel, you know, 2-3 hours just to see a specialist because, you know, there's none in their area. And so it's almost as if what our goal is what we like to call, we're trying to democratize access to healthcare. And we're trying to do this by building this network of clinics, you know, powered by telehealth software. So patients can come, you know, and they don't have to worry about, oh, I have to travel this far, I have to do this. And so access becomes much more readily available to them. And it's no longer a geographic, you know, barrier to get, you know, proper healthcare that you need. It's, I think there's it might be somewhere around, you know, 45-50% of specific, of patients with specific like conditions go untreated because they just don't have time to reach a doctor or they don't have one in their area that can help them. So I would say access to care is, you know, our main issue that we're trying to solve.
Yeah, I mean, that's one thing that you pointed out perhaps could be interesting because like you said, some of the people need to travel quite a long distance to visit a specialist. And at the same time, yeah, I mean, it is challenging, especially in the US, because of the way, let's say, the population is distributed. How do you see that happening still? Like, you know, you would be solving that more on the, let's say, applications level or the technology level. But at the end of the day, they still need to perhaps see a specialist in their neighborhood or the nearest city, right? So how do you see that being resolved? Perhaps you're solving it more on the content level, you know, you're solving it more on the, let's say, accessible as far as the specialist seeing the person is concerned, but at the end of the day, if they still need to physically see that, then that's not possible, right?
No, for sure. And there's no, you know, solution to, we don't anticipate everything becoming a digital, you know, solution. We know that at some point you have to go in and see a doctor. I think our idea is maybe you have to see them once or twice, but we can, you know, save you time. We can save you money by providing this service or providing this software that minimizes the amount of times you have to travel or minimizes, you know, the expenses you incur. There is no way around, you know, having to physically see a doctor. There's no way it will go fully virtual, but we think virtual care is, another component that, you know, providers can use in their arsenal to help patients, whether it be specialists or primary care providers. And what we've seen in the US with certain companies is they do, you know, in these rural areas, they have a lot more e-consults where, you know, the primary care provider reaches out to a specialist, you know, who may not be within the vicinity and it's difficult to, you know, get the patient to that provider, but they're able to gather, you know, provide that provider with test results, whatever, and then they can relay the information to the patient and treat the patient better because they have the information from the specialist.
And if you look at the different ideas that you want to sort of, you know, let's say implement within the company, I'm sure there were ideas that were great, right? Where you got a lot of credits for perhaps. And maybe there are some ideas or let's say some setbacks that you may want to reflect on. And what would that be today?
So I'm just thinking about different ideas, right? So it's a startup, right? So everything is new. So you want to try out everything. And then you realize some of the things that you thought are going to work, it actually worked. Some of the things you thought, like, you know, these are great ideas, we are going to implement this and it's going to be awesome. But then the customer said no. Were there any incident as such, like where you are like, okay, we need to scrape this idea as soon as possible?
As far as the customers go, I think we've actually been on the opposite, and where, like I think I mentioned before, where we thought an idea wasn't needed and we ended up switching, you know, it 2 months down the line to say, oh, actually this is going to be super important for us to grow. And one of those ideas was what we like to call the patient waiting room. And this feature just allows patients to check in for their virtual visit so that the provider can, you know, so that they're ready and waiting for the provider. So basically what it resembled a regular clinic where they could check in, you know, provide, you know, their symptoms to, you know, the medical staff prior to the doctor entering the chat. Whereas, you know, prior to that, we had just the doctor and patient connecting right away. And, you know, the doctor would have to do a lot more work that normally would be done by their staff. So that became a hindrance to the doctor wanting to do more telemedicine visits because they almost felt like it was more work for them, you know, gathering the symptoms or the triage. You know, they're used to, the patient is ready for them. They jump into the room and then they see the patient. So that was a feature that we stayed away from for a while, and then we ended up moving towards, and now it's been, you know, it's been exceptional for us. There's a lot of clients really enjoy, you know, the patient being ready to go when they, you know, they enter the room. They don't have to ask further questions. They already know why they're there and what, you know, needs to be done.
Mm-hmm. But that's a very interesting, let's say, situation to be at, right? So, yeah, because I speak to a lot of leaders on this space, you know, and most of the time they talk about different ideas that they thought are going to be interesting for them to implement within their offerings. And sometimes it doesn't go according to the plan, right? So I'm sure you're lucky in that regard that, you know, every time you thought about a different ideas to implement, and, you know, you would be on the other side that, you know, you had to implement those ideas. Otherwise, yeah, the ideas are on the cool fridge for a long time.
Right. Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, it probably would have benefited us more if we had thought to do it sooner, but you live and you learn, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But that's a good position to be at, right? And when you look at you explained about how quickly you had to bring in more people and then, you know, give them a quick training, and then they had to start the next day itself, right? So when you look at the kind of people that are going to support you in this whole journey, what kind of people that you are looking for as far as the mindset or, let's say, the ethical side is concerned? Or where do you say, okay, these are our top three must-haves in a employee? Without that, I'm not going to hire this, let's say, person.
Sure. I would say what we look for, culture fits. You know, we, as far as, you know, the leadership team, we're, from morning to night, we're trying to think of ways to, you know, better the business. And we want people to buy into the belief that this is what we think is a $1 billion company, right? We're not there, obviously not there yet. We're very small, but we still have that vision. So I would say vision, you know, believe, buying into the vision is number one. Reliability is obviously very high, but it would be number two for us, because, you know, we're relying on these individuals to deal with customers where, you know, we can't monitor them. We're relying on them to do it on their own and, you know, get it done. And like you said, these are individuals that came on within 6 hours, 12 hours.
Yeah.
So that's a lot of trust. So, you know, we trust them to do the right thing. And so those would be my major component.
One of the key let's say, component that you talk about is culture, right? And I have seen a lot of companies that are looking for, let's say, a diverse group of people that because they think that, you know, or there's assumptions that, you know, the diverse group of people create, let's say, innovative products or maybe a healthier environment. Do you also agree there or you have a different point altogether?
I would definitely agree that diverse people do create better products because I think when you have someone like our CEO who's very technical and, you know, he wrote the code himself and so he has one perspective on the direction and what's the next best idea or the next best feature. Whereas I'm coming more from actually being in a doctor's office. I've worked there. So I have kind of an insight on to where what doctors want and what, you know, they like, what they won't like. So for him to be able to take my opinion, which he does all the time, it's been great. We have a great team. It's a unique perspective, you know, coming from and someone who's actually worked there. And, you know, that's why I think, you know, our product continues to thrive is because we have these unique perspectives. We have people who have done sales in other industries who came and said, you know what, let's try this method. And, you know, we listen to them. So yeah, I think diversity is important because it's not just the diversity in people, it's the diversity in thinking that helps move our product forward and, you know, makes it the best it can be.
And if you look at the different group of people, different coming from a different background, what is one thing that you feel like this is very generic to everyone, right? In your own company, because it might be different in every company, but then if you think about your company, then how do you see that one of the element or two of the element, I don't know, are very generic to every individual, even though they are coming from a different cultural background, at the same time, you feel like, okay, there is one element that makes them as a team, right? As a team, they're working together and so forth. So what is that element you can sort of, you know, think of?
I would say it seems that although we've all come from different backgrounds, different industries, that we all feel like we have something to prove. And whether that's us or to the outside world, we have such a desire to be successful and prove, whether, like I said, to us or to the outside world that we can do this, that it's almost infectious when you get into a meeting and you see how engaged people are and they're like, you know, we can do this. This is something that we're after and I would say relentless. That's what the word I'm looking for. You know, we're all relentless in the pursuit of achieving this goal. And, you know, that would be the word I would say that all of us have.
And what is the driver? You know, what can be the driver for being relentless? You know, there must be a driver which is forcing you or which is actually guiding you towards that, right? So sometimes you are in the best of the position in the industry. You are working perhaps for the best companies and you perhaps are doing okay as far as getting paid is concerned. What do you think the driver is as far as someone being able to wake up early in the morning and then working hard and then being very happy, you know, with the less pay?
I would say it's the fact that we're building it ourselves. So we're the ones in charge. We're the ones making the decisions. So it's different building something from the ground up yourself versus me coming from a 40,000 person company, right? Like I'm just another fish in the sea over there. Whereas here, you know, this is a product that I'm shaping. I'm providing my input and on a day-to-day basis, the product is moving because of my work or my decision to do something or my contributions. So I think it's the one industry, you know, the startup world where you actually can be 27, 28, 29 and be the one shaping a company's future. And I don't think that feeling you wouldn't be able to get anywhere. It's really quite exhilarating to be, say, you're in control of this company.
So it's that driver. And how do you really replicate the same driver across the employees, right? So what do you say to them? You know, it's I'm sure there's something that you have to you know, say to them in order to get their buy-in, right? I'm sure there are reasons why people, every people have a different reasons to join the job. There are necessity as such. But other than that being, one of the elements being the necessity, there are drivers which either a person is actually interested in the job or not, you know. So there must be something that you say to them so that they are constantly thinking about work in spite of all the challenges that they're going through.
I don't know if it's necessarily something we say or I say, but it's we keep them, I think I mentioned this before, we show them our progress from like, you know, week to week, month to month. I mean, we've hit, they're buying in because they see the potential. At least that's what I believe. They see the potential of what's happening. I mean, we're a part of this program now, this accelerator program in the US called Techstars. We were one out of 11 companies selected out of 500 that applied. And so this is a big name in the startup industry as far around the world. Honestly, they have programs across Europe as well. But it's almost harder to get into Harvard than it is to get into, you know, Harvard, Oxford, than it is to get into Techstars, right? So, you know, these accomplishments, seeing that even people outside of us within the company think we're going to be, or have enough faith to say, this is a company to look out for. I think that's enough motivation to say, you know what, we are on the right path. And that's why I want to get up and do this every day.
Yeah. Yeah. Otherwise in this difficult times, you know, people hardly want to sort of, you know, work because I've seen colleagues like who are taking the benefits and just staying home because that's more, yeah, just staying home and being convenient there, you know, I think.
And another thing is obviously we're not a huge company. We have a good deal, you know, some employees, but everybody is responsible for something, and it would be easy to tell if somebody's not doing it because, you know, there's so many different aspects of the business that need to be taken care of that if one person is not doing their job, we would be able to tell within like that day that something's not right here, because each person has a big responsibility. And if they don't get it done, then, you know, we know that, hey, we need to speak to this person. But that honestly has never happened to us.
And what are some of the difficult decisions you have to take as a leader in the company, whether it's hiring people or making a product decisions, right? So there must be decisions you are like, oh, shit, I don't have, please don't make me do this, right? Those kind of decisions. Like, what are the decisions that you can think of, like, you don't want to be in that situation?
I think more of the decisions is not trying to do everything ourselves, as in the leadership team. We have such an affinity to the company that we want to protect it and do all these things, but we have to trust, and we do, in the staff to, like, you know, let certain, you know, tasks go to them and, you know, trust that they're going to produce. And that's a pretty hard thing to do when you feel so invested in the company, is letting someone else, you know, do, you know, an important presentation or come up with a new deck that we need to for an enterprise deal. These are things, you know, we would want to take care of our own, but we couldn't because, you know, there's just so many other things we have to take care of. So being okay letting go of important tasks and knowing they're still going to get done because, you know, people have bought in and we trust those individuals.
And again, this kind of decisions are difficult to make, right? And when you are like, okay, you know, I gave one of the example to one of the leader in previous sessions that, you know, I used to do invoicing to my client, right? I used to do invoicing to my client in the past, and I know exactly what numbers is there in that invoice. But if I'm asking my staff to do that, then perhaps I'm not comfortable for the staff to do that unless the staff is an accountant or something, right? But in the past, like, you know, it used to be only the, let's say, the CEOs or the leader of the company actually doing that. Now that has changed. Now we have to trust more on the people who are actually going to do the same thing, and maybe even better than us, because they are just thinking about the invoice, right? They're not thinking much, you know, so.
Yeah. Letting go is tough. Letting go is tough. Growing the company and letting go of certain tasks is always difficult because you're just so protective. But yeah, it's really important to be able to say you hired this person for a reason. You know, they're here for a reason. They have, you know, just as much invested into the company as you, and they want to see it grow. So you just have to be like, you know what, I can trust you, and you can take over this responsibility.
And if you have to think about really those moments where you are making those decisions, like, okay, this is a very bad decision, or this is a good decision that you made, right? As far as letting go of things that you were in control in the past. Think about a situation where you felt like, okay, you know, it's very difficult to take that decision, but it turned out to be okay. But at the same time, think about the situation where you thought, you know, it's going to be okay, but it didn't go out according to the plan. Let's say you did the decision to let go of things, yes? Yeah. And often it went according to the plan, but there might be occasions where, you know, it didn't go according to the plan.
Oh, so you're just asking for an example, I'm sorry.
Yeah. So I just want you to reflect on the moment where you said, okay, you know, these are some of the tasks that I used to do. Now it can be handled by other people, right? And you have faith on them, you trust them, and so forth. Now, at the same time, there might be occasions where you are like, okay, this can be done by these people, but then you are surprised that it didn't go according to the plan.
Yeah, I think a lot of times if that happens, that might have been, you know, maybe a fault of myself not explaining exactly what I needed to be done. And, you know, sometimes I don't think we've had a situation where something like that has cost us and, you know, much at all. I just think, you know, sometimes it's difficult to convey everything, you know, in a virtual space where it's either through Slack or we're doing these things, you know, we're not in person. So sometimes we think we've conveyed our message perfectly and, you know, they know exactly what to do. And then you come to find out, oh, maybe I didn't give you all, you know, what you needed. And I think that's like an adaptation from not seeing them in person, not being able to walk through it in person. It's just, you know, either a message or it's a video conference, quick video conference. So it's an adaptation that we have to make, but I wouldn't say anything has been, you know, egregious where I was like, oh, I can't believe I gave this to someone and, you know, thought they could do it, but they, you know, didn't do it at all, you know, well at all.
Now, in a separate context, I would like to maybe ask you a question that it's one of the generic questions I ask to everyone. You know, there being a leader, it's also important that the leader is also in, like, thinking about other technologies or aware of other technologies that are up and coming, and maybe thinking about implementing those technologies so that you are, again, going to have extra edge over the competitors, right? Or maybe you're just curious about other technologies for the sake of being curious on those technologies. Are there anything that you are more curious about now, you know, given the situation we are in?
More, you mean technologies?
Technology-wise, yes. Yeah, for example, you know, just to give you an example, people are talking about AI, people are talking about, I don't know, data, you know, people are also talking about blockchain, or people are, you know, those kind of things, right? Anything that you feel like, okay, this is something that we also need to look into, or maybe you are curious because you have that thirst to actually know more about the technology itself.
Sure. I mean, I've actually thought blockchain was an interesting idea, you know, cryptocurrency from maybe a few years back. And now you see with something like this, the value of the dollar taking a hit and people now investing heavily in cryptocurrency. I think even a story came out last week that the U.S. Postal Office is investing in, you know, blockchain, and they're also talking about it becoming a way for virtual voting and all these things. I think that, you know, aspect of it is very interesting. The amount of applications that it can have as far as, you know, everyday life is just immense. And that's something that I'm interested in. I've, you know, known about it for a while, but I think it's really taking off now. And I think I need to actually do a little more research and see, you know, how I can either get involved or participate.
Yeah. Well, one of the thing, you know, the reason why perhaps I may have popped this question is because A, I wanted to know how the leaders are sort of, you know, curious about new things, and B, yeah. Because you are into this medical space and there are a lot of innovations happening in medical space. And one of the elements is the patient's prescription, right? So if you have issued a prescription to a patient, then perhaps, you know, if they need a medication in the future as well, then you simply need to extend the date and you don't need to issue a new prescription, but then perhaps you can trace everything that you have actually given to the person, right? So and those kind of things, you know, I'm just thinking in terms of the practical use and also the medications being, let's say, you know, applicable to a single person. It's like these days, people are thinking about customizing the medications for a single person because of whatever good reason, right? And you don't have a what do you call generic medications for every patient, but then they're thinking about, you know, maybe doing analysis of the persons and then sort of issuing a medication to a person. So in those sense, perhaps those technologies can come into the picture and maybe it would help. I'm just guessing.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, today, you know, we have what's called RX compounding, you know, pharmacies where we actually have a few providers on the platform for a pharmacy like this, and they meet a patient virtually. They find out, you know, the symptoms or whatever. And then from there, they personalize the medication for that patient, you know, that they physically put together that medication. So it is an interesting area. And I think we need a lot more of that because, you know, as you can see, not everybody responds to treatment, you know, generic treatments, like you said, and it's important to, you know, cater to the individual for care and not, you know, just this general sense of, oh, these people can take this medication.
Okay. Yeah, I think you guys are doing something interesting. And of course, you know, like you said, you know, people are jumping into this particular industry because, you know, the future is still uncertain, you know. And I really, really like to see new companies, you know, trying out new things, you know, especially in this particular sector. So I was quite curious about learning what you guys are into and really appreciate your time today.
For sure. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah. And it's interesting, right? Like the way things are moving now and we are limited to the Zoom conversation, but yet it is interesting. Yeah. And otherwise, you know, I'm thinking like I wouldn't be having this conversation, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, we don't know when it's going to go back to normal, if it'll go back to normal, you know, in a month or if there'll be a vaccine. So it's going to be like this for a while. And I think we talked about it before. It's just about adapting. Yeah, and, you know, we made this conversation work, right?
Yeah. No, the thing is like, I don't know, you know, if it's going to be a 1 month or two, you know, at least in our region here, we are talking at least a year and beyond, right? Even though we are very close to Germany and there's one of the, let's say, company who are actively working on the vaccine, but still we are very optimistic that it would be a year or two from now that we would all be vaccinated. But then, even then, you know, we don't know if that vaccine is actually going to work.
Yeah, right? It works.
So we might be in this cycle forever, right? So that's my worry. You know, we might be in this cycle forever. And it might just be a flu shot sort of vaccine. You know, it's like, okay, you know, the effect may last for a certain time and then you have to maybe inject again. I don't know. You know, we're all making assumptions, right? So,
of course, because they're making a lot of assumptions about the virus itself, right? I mean, it's such a new virus that they don't have all the information yet and they're trying to make a vaccine as fast as possible. So for sure, you're right. It could be next year they talk about a vaccine and we get it and it might work for a year, but it could be, you know, a yearly event for us, just like the flu. It's crazy.
Okay. Okay, I think I took all your time, and you may have. You're based in which state in the U.S.?
New York, New Jersey.
Ah, okay. Okay, so it's not that bad. Okay. No. It's still, I think, what time is it there now?
1 p.m. now, 1:05.
Yeah. Okay. So we are about 6 hours difference. So
yeah, I think so.
Okay, Drew, thank you so much once again for joining this session. I'm quite pleased that we had this conversation, and I really want to wish you all the best in this particular journey as a leader of the company. And, you know, we look forward to talking to you in the future and see how many Jiros has been added to the company's arsenal.
Exactly. I can't wait for that conversation. So yeah, we'll book it now.
Okay. You take care then.
All right, Bruno. Thank you so much for having me again.